Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and today I am joined by my co-host.
Kayla, as usual.
As usual. I said it like it was like going to be something new, but it wasn't. One of these
Just
days it
me,
will be,
Just me, unfortunately.
You never know. how have you been? How has your week been?
You know, it's been just a week. I've been watching movies. I've been binging Netflix. I have been on a Hallmark Channel Christmas movie roll. I think I've watched, I don't remember what the exact number is, but it's around 13 Christmas movies already this November. That is not normal for me. I'm normally very much December 1st, Christmas starts. And for some reason this year...
Man, you really moved it up this year. You moved
it
up a whole month.
I needed it to start now, and I started it now. Yeah. So I've been pumping out the Christmas Hallmark movies. I've watched a few of the, you know, new Netflix Christmas movies that they've already kind of put out. But I'm getting my move on, my holiday groove.
Which we'll be talking about coming up. We'll be talking about some of those newer Christmas movies or holiday movies on Netflix.
Yes.
So
I have
tuned,
yet to
you know.
See a good one. So.
Oh. Preview of that episode. But for this episode, this is not Christmas themed because we're not going to enforce that. Your November 1st Christmas start on our listeners. So we are actually doing another triple feature today, which is exciting because our last one was a while ago. Was it March even? Like beginning of the year with Xander.
That was January.
Oh geez. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's been almost a whole year since we've done a triple feature.
Yeah. You know, bringing it back, a throwback to the triple features. I think these are cool because it gives us like a chance to talk about movies. Like I don't think we would maybe never talk about on the podcast, you know, because either we're so obsessed with doing a new release or just some
we're
of these
stuck
like
in our
two...
own opinions,
right? Yeah, stuck in our own opinions. So you know, get someone in here, give their opinions of movies they love, and we can gives me a chance to either rewatch them or watch them for the first time, which is also cool. So today we have Hannah. Hannah, do you want to introduce yourself just about what you do, what podcasts that you do, just anything you want to say?
Hi, I'm Hannah, and I come from the Cinemania World podcast, and then I also have another podcast called Robert Podcastin. On Cinemania, we talk movie news, movie reviews, all things movies, TV, all that good stuff. And then Robert Podcastin is very much Robert Pattinson and going through his filmography, which is great. The gist of it.
That's fun. Kayla, remember when we were pitching a podcast one time to each other? I think Zach was there was too.
Oh,
and we were gonna the Rob Lowe podcast,
the Rob
Lowe
podcast,
the Lowdown.
We're gonna do the Lowdown and go through all of
the
Rob Lowe's
oh
movies and talk about them.
Yeah,
because it's definitely like, I mean, he's not like Robert Pattinson level, you know, but he's like
an icon in his own sense.
Yeah, in his own world, and just a little different level of fame, maybe.
How fun.
Every West Wing episode, we could get a lot. We get a lot of mileage
could
out
you
of
imagine?
That one.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, maybe one day, keep that one in our back pocket.
copyright it while you can.
Yeah, right. The Lowdown, copyright 2021. Before we jump into this episode, let's go over some of our answers to last week's question of the week, which was, does Eternals make you more excited, less excited, or the same amount of excited for the future of Marvel content? So we got some answers here. So I'll just go through them. Zach Smith Michaels always coming in with the realistic takes, with just the simple way less with a period. That's how it is. I like this answer from Bryce, who is part of the After Credits podcast, who they did the High School Musical episode with us. I like this answer because this is about how I feel, where he said about the same because he was already worried about the direction that it's going, which like in as someone too, like who didn't hate the movie, I think that I feel similarly, mostly just because it didn't do anything to make me just more excited, I guess. It just kind of kept it where it was. Kayla, what are some of the other answers we have here?
So my brother, also Zach, Fanuff, said more excited, exclamation point.
Okay.
I know that he really liked Eternals. You can go read his Letterboxd review on why he thought it was a good movie. And he seems to be very enthusiastic about the artistic direction of the Marvel Universe, which is cool. And then our good friend Bella, who was on our Slumber Party Massacre episode, she said, from what I've seen, way less. It feels like the franchise is spinning its wheels while putting marginalized casts front and center to take the blame for corporate cowardice and design by committee scripting. It's just hard to care anymore. I can't even get excited for She-Hulk.
Wow. Destroyed. yeah. She writes so well. Wow.
I know.
That's like really well put. Like, I wish I could write that well. Hannah, I know that you are a fan of Eternals, so do you want to give your input here? Because we don't have a lot of like dissenting opinions right now for this.
I think it's kind of hard for me because I did love the movie, but at the same time, I've also been worried for the future of the MCU. Like, ever since I finished Loki, I think is when I was like, okay, because that's like when the multiverse stuff like really started to be like, oh, it's real, we're doing this, right? And my issue with that is that I watched that last episode of Loki and I was like, it took 30 minutes of exposition for them to explain this in a tangible way for like audiences to like digest it. And I'm like, how are you going to do that, especially going forward with like Spider-Man No Way Home? It's like not everyone's watching the shows in the first place. So like going into No Way Home, not everyone's going to have that 30 minutes of exposition that was needed to explain the multiverse in a way that like made sense to like general audiences, right? So going into No Way Home, if they're keeping those same rules, it's like, how are you going to do that? Not everyone is familiar with, like, I know we like to like imagine that everyone's familiar with like Daredevil, like Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire. Even my sister just watched the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies for the first time this year. So it's like, I'm like, they're putting so much faith into people like having this like past knowledge of things that we're familiar with because, you know, we're in that crowd of people. And then like going into like Multiverse of Madness, like we're even bringing the X-Men now, like past X-Men. So it's like my sister hasn't even started watching the X-Men movies, and she wouldn't if I wasn't like her sister, you know. And she's a fan of the MCU, and she's already clocked out ever since Endgame. She's clocked out. So it's hard for me to be like, you should get excited about this because all this stuff's coming. And she's like, I have no idea what the shit is. So like, I don't know.
And it's, there's so much.
There's so much.
Like, if there was a little bit less content like that you have to consume, I think it would be a lot easier to comprehend the multiverse and everything that's about to go into that. Because it's like, you already have all that, and then now you're introduced to, like, Celestials. It's just a lot. It's a lot thinking about the future. I'm erasing most of it from my brain, and everyone knows I'm only looking forward to Ant-Man, and that's it.
The only one in the world, perhaps?
I just want Ant-Man, Quantumania, and more Sebastian Stan. Those are the two things at the top of my list.
I definitely agree. I mean, getting sucked, it's so hard not to get sucked into an MCU conversation anymore, but I think it would be more successful at this point if they just weren't viewing it as a cinematic universe, because I think that's really holding them back from even just going to where they want to go. Because I think Eternals would have been a better movie if it wasn't attached to a cinematic universe, because the whole time I'm watching it, I'm just thinking like, so how does this connect with the multiverse? Like, are there multiple Celestials in the multiverse? Like, is there does the world also explode? There's just a lot of things to remember, and I just don't think your general audience is going to have, they don't have the time or care enough to watch all those things, especially with the shows.
My sister's general audience, and she didn't like Eternals. Like, she thought Eternals was too dense. And I think that's, like, a problem where, like, people are disconnecting. I think, like, I know critics, like, didn't love it, and I don't think general audiences are loving it. I mean, we saw it from, like, the CinemaScore. And I'm like, my sister, she's general audience and stuff like that. She goes into Marvel movies expecting, like, a Marvel movie. And I'm not saying Eternals isn't a Marvel movie, because it definitely has, like, the Marvel formula. But it's, like, the most different, I'd say, feeling from any other Marvel movie, right? So when she watched it, she was like, I don't get it. And I'm like, It definitely seems like there's just a general like disconnect to this movie. And I think it is because we've strayed. It's not a huge stray, but it's like enough of a stray from like what we know the MCU to be. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see in the next few years if anything comes in to kind of take Marvel's place as like the center of pop culture. Because there's always something. Like,
I think Kevin Feige has something up his sleeve. He's gonna be like, calm down, it's okay.
Or a Star Wars movie, you know? Maybe he's putting all his chips onto Star Wars. Who knows?
He's tired of the MCU.
Who knows?
He is. He's an enigma, that man.
When you posted your like Marvel ranking, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was so funny to see people's reactions to that.
They're so mad every single time.
Because like we saw that, and I think maybe Noah had sent it to me first or something, but we were both like,
I don't remember
"Whoa! Anymore. Like this is so crazy. This is so different. Like that is so like cool that she sees these like so movies so differently than we do." And then we were like seeing all the comments.
Well, and a fellow Far From Home lover, because I think like me and Kayla feels like we're the only people.
I loved
that
Far From Home.
Far From Home is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like. No joke. No hyperbole.
It was so good.
Wow.
I think I gave it like
so
4 stars. Like it's up in the top, and
yeah,
I feel gaslighted all the time having it up in my in my ranking.
I feel gaslighted all the time because people always say we love the Raimi movies because it's campy, and then I'm like, Far From Home is
that
camp.
Campy too.
I'm like, it's and they make fun of the they make fun of the bus scene all the time, and I'm like, that bus scene
that's
is like
camp
100%. And I'm like,
oh,
that
I
is
not
awful
seen
the Raimi movies, and you guys love it in the Raimi movies but hate it in this movie. I'm like, I don't get it.
They just want to hate. That is it. They just want to hate. But I
feel
I love
like
it.
That. I try and hear people out. Like, I love to, like, be like, I really want to understand, like, what your perspective is. But, like, with that, I'm like, it just feels like you guys, like, go into these movies with your mind made up. Like, a lot of the time,
yeah,
that's how I feel.
Definitely.
And that sucks.
I really like that movie.
Movie's emotional core, too. I think that movie is, like, really fun and stuff. But, like, I think the, like, aspect of grief that is in the movie, it's very surface level. But I still think it works really well. I mean, like, every time I watch it, I feel a little, like, choked up watching Peter sit in that ship, have that conversation with Happy. Like, I love that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's just jump into the actual episode now, which we always start these with just a little bit about our guest, what they like about movies, when they first started liking movies, what makes a great movie for them. Basically, just, you know, the regular intro stuff before we get into the movies themselves. So, Hannah, what was the first movie that you watched in a movie theater?
I'm not 100% about the first, but I know the first one that I remember is Iron Man 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
That is not an answer I was expecting. So
I was like very late into like getting into movies. I mean, I didn't really like start watching them until like 2016, but like all my life I've been very much in like the superhero kind of stuff because of like my dad. So that's like a huge thing for like my family is like the MCU. Like that's why I have such a love for it, because I kind of grew up on it.
Yeah.
And like the X-Men, like those first like Spider-Man movies, the Raimi ones, like all of that, it's been like deeply ingrained into like my personal my personality, because like watching up they were just like my, you know, bread and butter. So yeah, Iron Man 2 is the one I remember, the first one I remember.
I haven't seen that movie in a while. Like it's been a long time since I've seen that.
It's not great.
So what makes a movie great for you, though? Like, what has to be in a movie for you to like it, say you enjoy it, or make it one of these three movies that we're going to talk about today?
I think I get in trouble on Twitter for this a lot, because I don't, when I watch movies, I like don't watch it through a critical lens like all that much, like at all. Like I know, like I have a lot of friends who like watch movies and like on their first viewing they'll be like on their notes pad, like just writing down like stuff, you know, that kind of stuff. But like when I watch movies, I just like go into it and hope that it makes me feel something. And I get in trouble on Twitter for like being like, It Chapter 2 is one of my favorite movies of all time. Far From Home was one of my favorite movies of all time because they make me feel something. And I'm not like sitting here being like, well, it didn't do this and it has like pacing problems. And I understand like that's a huge part of like film criticism and like, you know, how other people view movies is just like not really how I go into movies. So just my main thing is for it to make me feel something.
Yeah, I think that's great because that's really, I mean, as much as I do take some those things into account. Or I feel like sometimes I have two ways of watching movies where I will sometimes do that. But for me to like a movie, it needs to fulfill the requirement of just making me connect to the story. So even if it's like a perfectly paced movie or very like a great directing, great performances, like I need to connect to the story that's being told before any of those things even matter to me. So I definitely can understand that. Yeah.
I mean, that's why Spooky Buddies is one of the greatest movies of all time.
I have no idea what that is.
It's in the Air Bud cinematic universe.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. But the buddies branch.
Right.
Yeah, so as we've been talking, you know, triple feature, the kind of reason that we started this series in general is really to give other people a platform to kind of share these movies that maybe the general population doesn't like, or maybe they're more obscure, or maybe they are popular blockbuster movies, but basically to give ourselves a different perspective on some movies, but also give people the opportunity to share what these movies mean to them, because there's always a movie out there for somebody, and we want to promote that idea. So that is the basis of Triple Feature, and we are here with a new Triple Feature for your ear holes.
Technically, yes, that is technically correct. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will be back with our Triple Feature for the day.
And we're back. Okay, get your popcorn ready. Get your nice warm cup of tea with some honey. I like honey
tea
in my
and
tea.
Tea and popcorn. Okay.
I drink tea with my popcorn, so I don't know about you.
That's pretty valid.
What's your guys' like candy of choice for the movie theater? Like, if you can pick a candy for when you go to the movie theater, what are you going with?
Watermelon, Sour Patch Kids.
Oh my god! Yes, I
don't like
those
chocolate.
Things.
Like at the movie theater for whatever reason, I don't really like chocolate candy in general. So something fruity, like gummy.
I am there with you. Every time I go to the grocery store, I tell myself not to walk down the candy aisle, and then I walk down the candy aisle anyway, and I buy a big bag of the Sour Patch watermelons.
That's so
we love
funny.
That.
I like a lot of different things. It really depends. Like Skittles are really good. Just stuff that can't get messy, I guess, is what you what I really want.
So no chocolate.
No chocolate. But I will say what I tried. I realized during Dune, actually, when I was watching Dune, because I had popcorn, and then I bought some Charleston chews because I love Charleston chews. I love those. And
I don't even know what those are.
It's like chocolate with like marshmallow.
Okay.
But it's like squish. It's like just hard enough that it stays together, but it's the texture is amazing.
You gotta freeze them. Okay. They're really good frozen.
They're good on they're just good. And I put them in the popcorn and mixed it together.
Iconic.
And that was fire. Like I just eating some popcorn with a Charleston chew in there, put it in my mouth. That was good. So I'm adventurous. I'll try anything as long as it's not like red hot or like those tamales or something. I don't know.
Those are good.
I don't like hot spicy candy. I'm just a wimp. So let's jump into this. So Hannah, what is the first movie you picked for our triple feature today?
Okay, so the first one on the sheet is Short Term 12. Nice. This is it's probably like my second favorite movie of all time. And it's one of the only movies that I have watched, I've watched it at home after Captain Marvel, because I was like, I should probably go through Brie Larson's discography. Filmography.
I think we should just call it discography. I think that's cool. It just sounds
a lot
cool.
I always like get it mixed up, and I'm definitely telling people that these like actresses and actors have like full on like albums.
Album releases. I mean, she has the Scott Pilgrim song.
Yeah. So I was like, I should probably go through her filmography, and I got to this movie and I watched it. And then immediately after finishing it, I put it on again and watched it back to back. It was just like that much of a like gut punch where I was like, I need to experience this again now. Yeah, it's everything to me. Love it so much.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Before we get too into it, let's read a quick synopsis. Now, Kayla.
Yeah, I will read a synopsis out of my brain for this one. Grace works at a foster facility where she meets Jaden, a newcomer with a similar past to her own. She also works with other kids, Marcus and Louise, and through her relationships with them and her other coworkers, she works to get through her own experiences and work through her trauma and also help the kids to see their futures in a brighter way.
Yeah, that's it.
Great.
That's basically great. The movie. Yeah, nailed it. Yeah, this movie, this is like one of those where it's like it's a smaller indie movie and it had been on my watch list for a while. And I feel like with these kind of movies, it's easy to just let them slip through the cracks. And like eventually it's just like hard to watch them at some point just because it's like, oh man, well, it's just one of those that just like the longer you wait, the harder it is to actually just get yourself to watch them. I feel like this was the podcast that made me watch it. So this is the only one of the three that I hadn't seen before doing this. And this is a great movie. I really like this movie. I mean, I'm an education major, so just a lot of the stuff that was in this movie just really hit with me. I think Brie Larson, like you kind of alluded to, is incredible in this film, which me and Kayla were talking a little bit about this.
It's my favorite performance of hers.
And I just think that, like, well, when people, like Marvel fanboys are like, oh, she's a terrible actress, I just feel like they haven't seen any movies that she's in besides, like, maybe Captain Marvel.
Which and like Captain Marvel is just not—it's not her greatest performance, and that's not her fault. I still stand.
It's literally not
because when she was in the end credits sequence of what Shang-Chi was she that Shang-Chi. Was
yeah yeah
oh my gosh I was like what like why do they give her terrible lines and terrible directing like it just feels
they can't like figure
time.
Out her look either I'm like I don't know if you guys know what's wrong with Captain Marvel like. I love Captain Marvel, by the way. I love that movie, but, like, people who use that performance against her, I'm like, she literally doesn't know, like, her personality, who she is, or anything for the entirety of the movie.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very obviously directing the issues with the directing.
I love Brie Larson. I am a big fan. Big
Me
fan.
Me too.
Yeah. I just feel like, how is it so hard for them to, like, figure out a style for her? Because, like, she's
very
so
weird.
Cool, and I feel like she looks great in, like, everything. So I just don't know, like, they just can't decide on something, like, on a fit for her. Like, they change her hair, like, in every
her
scene
look
she's in.
The first movie is what they should stick to. She looks great
I agree.
In the first movie.
I agree.
Endgame, don't know.
well, they kind of, like, changed everyone's hair in Endgame. I think the hairstylist for Endgame just was, like, that was maybe
last
the last
one,
movie.
Let's go.
And they were like, guys, we gotta do all the hairstyles we have.
She's great in this, though. Like, I mean, just so good. And what is so crazy to me about this movie is that it has this was very early on, and a lot of these, like, major A-list actors,
all Academy Award winners now.
Yeah, like,
I know
Rami barely has a role in this, and he's
Lakeith,
like,
just got his first nomination.
Oh,
yeah,
Lakeith, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's great.
And then,
this is his first movie.
Caitlin
this is Brie Larson's Dever. First leading performance.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin Dever, yeah. Well, and the budget's only $1 million. Like, so think about, like,
that.
how much you'd have to pay these people now for to be in this movie.
And like, the director just directed, you know, Shang-Chi. So it's like, it's just insane.
I should have been on this movie. I think, like, there's something
everyone
in
who
this movie.
On this movie.
Something
is, like,
in the water.
Come on. Yeah, well, it's a great movie. Like, I don't know if you could see this movie and come out of it as, like, a casting director and not think, like, I need to get one of these people in my movie now. Because everyone just gives it a great performance and is just, like, perfect for their role. Like, Rami Malek maybe is the only one that maybe I was like, but... I'm also
that's how I always feel about him in general.
Right.
So
other than Mr. Robot, I feel like Rami Malek is such like a.
He killed his performance as Achman Ra in Night at the Museum.
Night at the Museum 1, I remember him being pretty good in. I think that might have been the highlight.
Truly the stepping stone for Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, right. Really prepared Took him to the next level. Great movie.
Yeah, it's Hannah, really why good. Don't you share, like, why you picked this, what you love about it, just all the goods?
So when I was picking my movies for this, I wanted to find stuff that would, like, cover, like, all of my, like, taste. And I think, like, this is a good stepping stone for that list, because I love movies where it's like it kind of like there's no plot, it's just kind of like people like living, and I feel like this is like the epitome of that. It just, it doesn't feel like, you know, it's like we have to do this to get to that point. It's just like people, you know, living their lives, and the conversations like feel like so just like natural and real and honest. And these are like mostly my favorite kind of movies, where you know, it's so bare bones, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
It's one of my favorites because I feel like it's just one of the most honest movies I've ever seen. Like, it doesn't, like, hold back anything, and it doesn't feel like it's, like, being dramatic for dramatics or, like, for movie's sake, you know? It just feels so real, and I love that. Mm. And each of the characters, like, you don't, like, have to spend, like, you know, 40 minutes with them to understand them or feel for them. It's like some characters you only see for like 2 minutes, and some like don't even really talk. One of my favorite things about the movie is like you see the rooms of these kids, and like you don't even have to like spend like more than 2 minutes with them to like understand, like even just like their surroundings, like you understand them right away, you know, just from like their decor or like stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, and with the plot and basically everything in the movie is just naturally kind of unfolds as the movie goes along. It doesn't feel like they're really trying to... It doesn't feel like you can see the wheels turning behind the scenes. Like, every character beat has this... Just the story unfolds just in such a natural way that just mimics life, honestly. Because, like, life is a story, and I think like this is a movie that really shows that, and how you just naturally, as the movie goes on, get to know Brie Larson's character Grace a lot more, and it just, as then you get to the end of the movie, and it just you just feel for them so much, and it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like you know, maybe that what they could have done in the act one is just dumped all of her backstory onto you. And then we're like, okay, now here's the story. It just, you naturally learn about it as the movie goes on from just spending time with her. I just love that because it's just great. Great character development, or just maybe not even development because you're just learning about her past, but just a great like unveiling of a character, I guess, because she starts off so much of a mystery. And then as the movie goes on, it's slowly like her full self comes into like into play, and you really can understand her character. And then it informs everything that even came before. Like, you're like, oh, that makes sense now why she did that. And that is reached back to here. And it just feels very, again, natural to me.
It's a very like show, don't tell. I feel like this movie is like a perfect example of like how you know, set things up and have them like have huge payoffs, and they feel earned and just like so good watching the movie, instead of like having huge exposition dumps or having characters like explain to like a different character, but actually explaining to the audience like why they, you know, have this kind of personality, or, you know, this is my life story and stuff like that. Like, and a different,
or why they're there, you know, like,
yeah. In a different movie, we would have never had the scene of Jaden talking to Grace about, you know, her father's abuse. Like, we would have never had a scene like that well expressed in, like, a different really director's good. Hands or, you know.
I agree.
Yeah. Kayla, any thoughts that you have?
Yeah, it's just incredible to me that this movie is so short, and, like, it doesn't feel as short as it is because of how well the story is, like, told through that time. And how you feel like you get to know all the characters, even though it is, like, you know, a much shorter movie. You kind of look at the runtime after and you're like, how did I get her whole arc? And how did I also get Jaden's whole arc? And, like, this whole thing with her and her, like, how did we get all of that in a single movie? Like, it makes no sense.
It's so cool because it opens on, like, it just jumps right into it on that conversation. And it's a little jarring at first because, again, it's just there's no exposition in the, I guess, classic way that you would see in a movie. And then you get to the ending scene, which mimics how the opening scene is structured. And you just feel so much different about it. Like, if you feel the warmth, the love, like, this the connection to the characters. And then it's just really, like you said, Kayla, like, it's just amazing that they were able to get you from point A to point B in that 96 minutes.
It's so heavy, but it feels so brisk. Like, the movie is incredibly, like, thematically heavy. Like, with that, like, 130 runtime, it's, like, insane how, like, brisk and, like, how you feel so just, like, okay at the end, you know? I feel like this movie could have easily tipped into, like, melodramatic, and it never even comes close to that.
Yeah, and I know a lot of ensemble films really struggle with, like, the idea of being an ensemble film, but also having a main protagonist, not to, again, bring it back to the MCU, but I know we talked about that last week with Eternals, where that was one of my issues, where it felt like they weren't balancing the ensemble piece, but also the protagonist piece well enough. And this movie, like, it does it so well, where it does feel like a true ensemble movie, where, like, I think Lakeith has more in the beginning, and then as the movie goes, then Jaden gets more of the attention, I guess. Not attention, maybe not the right word, but just she's more a part of the story because you hear her story more as the movie goes on. But the center of the story still is Grace, and you have both of those things existing at the same time, where you have her as the main character, but then as well you have everyone in that ensemble really fleshing out the entire film, which is a really hard thing to pull off, again, in 96 minutes, to get all of those characters, give them enough time for you to invest in them, and then also have an individual character arc.
I think Destin Daniel Cretton is, like, very good at that. I mean, like, I even see it in, like, Shang-Chi. Like, with Marvel movies, it's very hard to, like, because I feel like a lot of the time with MCU characters, they all had the same personality, right? It doesn't feel like the writing for each character is, like, distinguished enough to, like, be like, oh yeah, like, I get it, right? Other than, like, Guardians, and, like, I think Eternals did it really well. And, like, in Shang-Chi, like, you don't really have a lot of time with one certain character, even though the movie is called Shang-Chi. I feel like we don't, you know, spend the most time with him. Like, I feel like Shang-Chi is kind of, like, a weird movie to talk about, because it's like, oh yeah, this movie's about Shang-Chi, but also, like, we have this, like, huge plot with, like, his dad, and, like, it actually feels like it's, like, fleshed out and earned and and stuff like that, which we don't get with the MCU a lot. But Destin Daniel Cretton just, like, really knows how to, you know, make you emotionally invested in characters, like, very fast, and knows how to write for characters and make sure that, you know, characters have, like, distinguishable personalities, and how people, like, have dynamics of when they talk to each other. It's like he creates very, like, dynamic conversations, is what I should say. And I love that.
Yeah, like, characters interacting and using that both as a way to, as an opportunity for us to invest in both of their characters while still also, like, furthering the story and the arc of the characters. Because, like we keep bringing up, with such a short runtime, you have to figure out how to do multiple things in a scene and still make it feel seamless. And Shang-Chi, yeah, like, I didn't even think about that, because I know obviously it's the same director, but with Marvel movies, I think it's easy not to analyze them as much, just because, like, you think, oh, they're a Marvel movie, it's the same formula. But it is a very similar thing he does in that movie, where it's basically an ensemble, it's almost an ensemble movie, like, technically not, but I would consider it close to an ensemble movie.
Yeah.
And it does have the ensemble piece. You feel like you know all the characters, but then you also have Shang-Chi's just main arc, which is a very prevalent arc in the story. So yeah, it's interesting. I'm interested to see what he does next. If he does another Shang-Chi movie, or just, because I haven't seen Just Mercy, which is his other film.
It's really good.
Another movie.
Yeah. It has the same kind of vibes of Children 12.
I read the book, actually. And... so yeah. If it's similar to the book, then I think that, like, there are a lot of characters in that. And so
I was going to say, I hope Dustin is the one to kind of helm these big MCU movies, like, going forward after the Russos. I think that he'd be perfect for it, especially, like, how we're talking about it now. He's so good with, like, ensemble pieces and, you know, dynamics. So I'd be very interested to see him tackle, you know, what big event movies we're going to have coming in the MCU.
There's plenty of options.
There are a lot in the works. Yeah. A lot of characters. just wrapping this up, this movie, I pretty much have said everything I want to say. Do you guys have anything you want to just closing thoughts before we move on to number two here?
No, I just like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really like the name too. Like, because yeah. I feel like it's one of those where when you read it, you're like, what exactly does that mean? And then you start watching the movie, you're like, oh, okay, that totally makes sense. But I think it kind of gets you hooked because it's not exactly clear, which I think actually the next movie we're going to talk about too. It's like you're looking at the title like, okay, so what does this mean? Like, I don't understand what this is telling me. So good movie. Definitely would recommend it. Those who haven't seen it, it is a little, like, kind of, we've hinted at, very heavy, so just make sure that you're in a good headspace and maybe look up some of the trigger warnings or anything just in case that is something that bothers you, but I would definitely recommend it. All right, moving on to movie number two, which is a bit of a pivot from the tone of number one, is Killing of a Sacred Deer by Yorgos Lanthimos. This is his fourth film, I think, because it was Dogtooth, then the other one that I haven't seen, and then Lobster, and then this,
yeah.
And then The Favorite. Yeah. And now he's working on another. He just started work on another one, I think. And so, yeah, this is his fourth movie, 2017. I can't believe that it's this relatively new, like only 4 years old, because I feel like this movie has been around for a while. Just like, it just feels like it's been around for a while, I guess.
Yeah.
Actually, first, let's read the synopsis here, because this is a movie that I think really needs a synopsis before we jump into it. So, Kayla, do you want to read out this one? Because I wrote this one, so it might be more fun if, like...
Sure, I would love to.
I think it's a good one.
Cardiovascular surgeon Stephen Murphy seems to have a picturesque life. A nice house, a loving family, and a watch with a metal strap. While not at work or with his family, Steven spends his time with an odd teenage boy named Martin, eating at diners and going on walks. But when Steven's son Bob wakes up paralyzed from the waist down, his seemingly perfect world starts to fall apart, forcing him to grapple with a dark event from his past.
Beautiful.
It's a hard movie to summarize. It took me a little bit to come up with, like, what do I say? Because... it's like it starts off and everything seems so seemingly unrelated, and then it kind of all comes together in that third act. But it's hard to kind of like come up with a summary to really start off the movie.
It's hard to talk about it without like spoiling it, because like I know I try and recommend it to a lot of people and they're like, oh, what is it about? And I'm sure they have an image when I say The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
like a medieval movie or something. Yeah. I expect it. Yeah.
It's a very hard movie to like be like, yeah, this is what it's about and this is why you should watch it.
Yeah, I would, let's just say like light spoilers. Like, well, I'll try not to spoil too much, but I think it's hard to really talk about this movie without saying some spoilers. And I do think like if you want to watch this movie, going in blind is the best way to watch it.
Yeah.
So I'll just give a light spoiler warning for this one before we go on. But why did you pick this movie?
So going back to like what my taste is, I love movies like this where it's just fucking weird.
Fair.
So that's like a huge part of like why I picked this. And this is like my favorite one, and one that I think introduced me to this kind of like little subgenre of what I would call just fucking weird. Like watching this for the first time, like, because when I first started watching movies in 2016, like I said, like watching movies other than just like superhero stuff. So this was, you know, pretty, I watched it when it came out. So it was, I was still pretty, you know, new to this kind of world of watching movies and through a different lens and stuff like that. So watching this, I was like, okay, and this is my first Yorgos film, by the way. I saw people talking
about it. That's a great one to start with, I guess. I mean,
I saw,
you know what you're getting into.
Talking about it, and I was like, okay, well, I should watch it, I guess. And then I watched it, and I was like, I feel like I shouldn't like this, and I feel like I shouldn't be, like, laughing or, like, just enjoying it, but I very much am.
I think it's, like, his most unsettling movie, because... I have not seen Alps, or he actually did Kaneda, so maybe I haven't seen two of his movies. But, I mean, The Lobster was his first English language movie, and I think that with his earlier stuff, even though I think like Dogtooth is technically more disturbing than this movie, I think it feels less disturbing because it's a foreign film, and like it just feels like it. You like once you start that movie, you know it's gonna be weird because like it's just the vibe.
This is
of that
definitely
one.
Like a descent into like madness.
Yeah, and I think because personally, because I speak English, like I think I have more of an expectation when a movie is in English, like for it to make sense to me as a viewer, I guess, or to speak the language of American cinema. Where this movie really does not speak really a language of any cinema. It speaks a language of its own.
It's Yorgos, you know?
Yeah, it speaks his own language. And it's actors that I've seen, like Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell. So I see these actors that I know, and I hear a language that I understand. And so I think going in, you just subconsciously expect something that's going to be a little more in line with, you know,
digestible.
Digestible. Yeah. And this movie is just not that. Like, even The Lobster and The Favorite, I think, have more mainstream elements than this movie, where this one, it's like, if it doesn't click with you, you just are not going to like it. Just because, like, it really commits to the bit. I mean, for lack of a better word. Like, it just commits all the way.
I feel like it's a hard movie for, like, people to, like, wrap their head around. Because, like, I explain it in a way where, like, it's a dark comedy. And a lot of people watch this movie and they're like, what are you talking about? There's nothing funny about this
movie. It can
movie.
Be a dark comedy if you want to. Yeah.
So, I feel like a lot of people, like, when they watch this movie, they definitely, like, get different things out of it. And I think that's beautiful. But it's such a weird. That's the best word to use for it.
Well, and it's one of those where, like, you get what the effort you put in, basically. So, like, if you're going into it trying to understand, like, trying to
There's
really
no
gain
this movie.
A
I'll
message, or just, like, I mean, just trying to gain something, like a message, basically. Because I think if you watch it really surface level, it just seems like one of those movies where it doesn't have a point, and you're like, what is going on? I felt that a little bit, too, even the first time I saw it, like, I mean, I think, like, watching it, you understand that great directing, great, like, scenes, the dialogue is really, like, cleverly written, but it just feels like there's no point at the end of the day. But when you, like, go into it trying to really dig into a lot of the nuances and really understand it, I think, like, you get, you have a more fulfilling experience. But if you go into it just expecting like a horror movie, which I think it was like marketed just as like a regular thriller, I think you're gonna be like disappointed.
The trailers are definitely like not what the movie is. Okay. I feel like A24 is great at that. They're like, hey,
yeah,
you just guys should come watch our totally normal horror movie.
Yeah, I think people are now more akin to that, like, you guys aren't fooling me. I know the Lamb trailer uses the Beach Boys song, but I don't think that it's gonna be, and it's not. It's like completely different than the trailer. Kayla, this was real your second Yorgos movie because you saw The Favorite.
I've seen
you watched
The
part
Lobster.
Of The Lobster, I think.
Yeah.
So this is your third then. I know that's like isn't your cup of tea type of movie.
Yeah, definitely not. This is like the opposite of my cup of tea.
What was your, like, reaction, you know, to some of the key scenes?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It's pretty much what I would expect from him. Like, it didn't really surprise me in any way, because I kind of went into it expecting some form of chaos or, you know, something weird and not knowing what's going on. And obviously, like, when you watch something of his, you can really appreciate his style, which is kind of how I felt. I didn't really like The Favorite. And that's how I felt with that movie too, is like, you can watch it and be like, wow, like he stays really true to the kind of content he wants to create, both on a technical level and a story level. And like, you can tell that he just doesn't really care what other people think. He's just like, this is what I want to create. This is how I want it to look. This is the vibe I want it to give off, and I'm going to do it, and he does. And I definitely really respect him for that. And I definitely felt that a lot watching this, like, where he does the low, like, really wide-angle shots and the moving shots and yeah. making it, like putting something off center.
Leaving a bunch of room above people's heads.
Yeah, so much space.
Yeah.
Which is something he does a lot in The Favourite.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just think that's really cool when I was watching it to be able to be like, yeah, this is like, I could tell that this is him and the kind of movie that he makes because it's he stays with his style.
He's a really cool guy. Like, even I watched some interviews after I rewatching this movie just because I was interested in what the press tour was like. And he just seems just like, he just seems like a cool guy. And like, a lot of the actors said that he's very relaxed, almost not hands off, but not like super like particular director. Where, I mean, going into a Yorgos movie, you know how to, you're supposed to act. So I don't think he really has to give too many notes on how to act because they know that they're supposed to. Even the, like, stilted, I don't know how you deliver some of like those lines like regularly. Yeah. Like, I think the lines, the way the lines are written, like you kind of have to deliver them weird because there's no other way. Yeah, it just seems like you said he just really knows what he wants, and I think that's I like that now, you know, because I think there's so many examples recently where more like art house or good directors are their visions are kind of tainted by a studio or they have to compromise their style for the audience, and this is I think one of the directors that is working today that it doesn't do that, and he still wins awards. Like The Favourite won a ton of Oscars, so or at least nominated. I know it won
some. It was nominated for a lot.
Gonna say I feel like if Yorgos, like his just vision of what he wants in his films is so well realized, and I feel like if it was like at all just like a little bit of like uncertainty, it wouldn't translate well at all because it is just like so like weird. So going into like a Yorgos film, I definitely like have that expectation. And then like recently I've discovered that he already has sons. I watched The Artist Self-Defense not too long ago, and I was like, this definitely feels like it's trying to be Yorgos Lanthimos film, but it just doesn't have like his touch to it. So it didn't like work for me. Yeah.
He seems very metaphorical guy just in general. Obviously his movies have, this is a reference to a very, I think it's like a Greek story. Cause he's Greek actually, very old, about a killing of a sacred deer. Someone that, I don't know the whole story. I'm not going to try to pretend like I know I read it, but
I've seen people talk like, about it before, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's like it's obviously like very deeply steeped in like a mythological kind of background, but that's not like ever really mentioned. But you can tell that he has a lot of metaphor and intention in what he is putting forth.
And I love that. I love that, like, because like I said before, I don't think there's like ever like I don't think there's no understanding this movie. I really don't. I've rewatched it so many times, and like I try and like be like I should really like think about this and sit on it and like find like a deeper meaning, but I don't think that's the way that this movie should be viewed. I mean, I feel like it's just a movie, it's like you take what you get, you know, and I feel like that's like very much like steeped into the movie also. I mean, like we have this whole thing of this kid, he can magic or cursing or whatever, right?
Yeah,
and
something.
I'm like, they it's never explained, never talked about. It's just like, this is what he can do, and you have to take it and believe it. That's it. And I'm like, I feel like that is very much what this movie is, like in a nutshell. So, I love that about it.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that I have a read on it, but I think that you can have multiple reads on it. I mean, I think you can take it as a dark comedy. I think you can take it as like a really just weird kind of almost not Wes Anderson, but you know what I mean? Like it's very much just about the style. But for me, like, well, let me bring up this one Letterboxd review I thought was really good and really like just summarize what I think is really it's about is this is from Brian Tallarico. And he said, a man who plays God meets a boy who plays devil, which is basically what the movie is. It's about this the Colin Farrell, the surgeon, who has this very controlled life. We see that in the beginning of the film. It's very clearly set up that his life is put together. He has the control because he's a surgeon. He has control over life. He has control over everything. And then he loses complete control of his life. And like how and even his family, like how people react to just when they lose control, which, I mean, I think we've seen in the last 2 years with COVID, like how people react when we lose control of the things like we for some reason think we can control, like, oh yeah, I mean, I can control this, it's my life, but really there's no, you don't have the control that you think you have. And so that's just a really fascinating thing to me, because I'm someone that also struggles with being out of control. And it's just interesting to see him put his characters in these situations that they're very uncomfortable in. And that last scene, I mean, it's not the last scene, but like the climactic scene in the living room is so good.
Oh my God.
Because
it's one of the most tense things I've ever seen.
It's so tense. Well, and not to like, because of the light spoilers, but I don't know, like, he got very lucky. Like, I don't know how he thought that was going to work, because he had to hit like a very accurate shot. But I mean, just the scene itself is just so well acted and played
this
out.
This movie is just like, everyone's so incredible in it. This is like my first exposure to Barry Keoghan. I don't know how to say his name.
He's really good in this movie.
He's
fantastic.
I feel like it's such a hard role. If like, there's very few actors who could have given what he gave to this. It's so cool. I mean, the spaghetti scene itself, I'm like, how do you even like approach that? You know?
Yeah, you read it on the page, you're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. Also, fun thing. I always, when I watch this movie, I think about I thirst tweeted Barry Keoghan one time. He posted like a picture of himself and I quote tweeted it, and I was like, come to my house and curse my family anytime you want, something along those lines. And he tweeted with laughing, crying faces.
My God.
Oh my word. That's,
I would throw myself off a cliff.
It was like 4 a.m. and I was like, I feel so embarrassed right now.
I would That's be so like, funny. I have not ever like had anyone like that like see a thirst tweet or anything like that. And I think if they did, I wouldn't be able to survive. Like, I just don't think I could do it.
I wanted to like delete my existence.
He's so fun. And he's so cool. Like, I think he picks really good roles, and like roles that he thinks he knows what he's good at, and he knows like what he can bring to a role. And he always, every time I see him in a movie, he just, I think, steals the show. Like Green Knight.
Oh yeah.
He completely steals the show in his scene.
Yeah.
100%. Just,
he's such like a magnetic.
And it's hard to pull focus from Dev Patel.
Like, you're just drawn to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Like, it takes a lot, and he did it. Yeah.
And even in like Eternals, like a huge ensemble piece. Like...
Kayla, do you have any other thoughts here? Cause I just feel like you haven't shared too much, and I know this isn't your favorite, but I don't want to like all talk over you.
Oh no, I've shared plenty. I feel like
proverbial sacred deer, you killed it off.
It's been offed. Yeah.
One thing that's funny in this is Sonny Sunchick is in this, and you know, then he was in mid-90s, yeah. So you got
I love
the
him.
A24 thing.
He's so cute.
He's really good in this movie.
Yeah,
like, I was.
I can't imagine being a
kid. How good of an actor.
Yeah, I can't imagine being a kid and having to like find a grasp on something Yorgos Lanthimos wrote.
Yeah,
you know?
And he does it well. Like
he seems so chill. I followed him since he like does skate stuff, and this is totally unrelated. He did this like skate video recently that was like a day in his life. And he was just like vibing and like felt really like down to earth. And I was like, this kid, I hope like for all the success for him. Like, I just hope that he has a good career. He was in the Christmas Chronicles too last year though. And that was a surprise.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He popped up out of nowhere.
But he was good in the movie, I thought.
Yeah, he was good, but it was a weird role because he played the girl's dad as a kid, and he like gave her advice about Santa Claus. It was really weird. It was a weird role for him.
It was just weird to see him like. It's just always weird in like the Santa movies to see older kids just talking about how they believe in Santa. Like, I know it's a Santa movie, but it just makes me feel embarrassed for them. I can't help but feel secondhand embarrassment sometimes. But
yeah,
he is a good actor, and I hope he can get in some newer roles soon, because I think he always like kills it. Any final thoughts on this movie before we move on? I think this is like a great movie, but again, it's like, it's just hard to talk about sometimes, like, because yeah. you just gotta experience it, I think.
Yeah, it very much is like, it's hard, you can't explain it in a way that's gonna make someone want to watch it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and even like, I wouldn't, this is a movie I wouldn't recommend to everyone. Like, there's certain, I think short-term,
I try
12
to
isn't I mean, you, good for you, good for, I just like, short-term 12 is something where I think has a, that is an indie movie that I think has a very broad appeal, and it just suffers from being an indie movie that not a lot of people have, like, are on film Twitter or really up to date with everything. But this is one where, like, this is, wouldn't be the first movie I recommend, but depending on the person, I think, like, if this is a movie for you, then it's really a movie for you.
Yeah. Cause, showing it to my sister was yeah. a ball.
Oh, man. That must have been interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
What did she think? What was her take?
I think she kind of, like, clocked out when that scene with Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman happened in the bedroom. I think that's when she...
Wow.
Which is
pretty early on.
Early, yeah, which is fairly early in the movie. I think she was like, okay.
It is a weird scene. I think with that one, too, like, because she's supposed to be, like, she's role-playing that she's on anesthetic, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, like, that is another example of, like, how he has to be in control, like, because he's in control of his patients, and he has to be, like,
very
have that semblance
Dave
of
Roman
control
Roy.
Over people. Yeah. Which, that's a scary scene. Like, it's unsettling. Yeah. You're watching, you're like, I feel like I shouldn't be watching this right now.
That's, like, the entirety of the movie.
That's true. That's true. Like, just, I just should not be here. I need
like,
to go.
Like, when Nicole Kidman starts talking about, like, Colin Farrell's hands, there's, like, a whole... monologue yeah. about his hands.
A lot about Colin Farrell's hands in here. Really, like, yeah. I wonder how he felt about that. You know, a lot of talk on his hands. Multiple scenes.
Yeah, fun stuff.
See, these are the conversations we love to usher into the podcast.
Hey,
no one opened this up today thinking, wow, didn't know we'd be talking about Colin Farrell's hands today.
Colin Farrell is a king. I'm just going to put that out there.
I love him.
I can't wait.
Lovely man.
To see him in Batman. Like, he's...
Oh, yeah. By the way, Colin Farrell and Barry Keoghan have another movie coming out soon together. Their
yeah.
third movie together, because yeah. apparently Barry's in Batman, so...
Yeah, he's in
apparently.
Batman.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently Joker.
we don't know who, but that would
That's
be great.
That's what they're saying.
Because I feel like this is almost like a Joker role.
Yeah.
Like this
oh, yeah.
feels like he's
even like
kind
the
of
Green Knight.
A Joker
yeah.
vibe.
I think it's inspired casting if he actually is. So.
Yeah, and even for the tone of the movie, like the tone of the movie is obviously like a very unsettling take on Gotham, and he's like a very unsettling Joker, where like someone like Heath Ledger or Joaquin Phoenix is a very classic example of a Joker character, and I think that it's just like a darker version. Like if that's, you know what I mean, like.
Mm-hmm.
A more like really grounded, just gritty version of Joker, I think he could play very well. So
mm-hmm.
let's hope. I would love it. Let's move on then to our final film, which is It Chapter 2. Not Chapter 1, but Chapter 2 from 2019. We actually reviewed this pretty early on in the pod's life.
We did.
Which is actually, of the three movies, my favorite It movie. Excited to talk
Went
about this one. It was interesting. Interesting rewatching it, because even though I did enjoy it, it wasn't one I really ever expected to rewatch. Definitely not this, like, 2 years after it comes out. So it was interesting rewatching it. But let's do our last synopsis of the day here. This again is chapter two, so the synopsis is kind of like jumping into the middle of the story. The year is 2016. 27 years after the fateful events of summer 1989, Bill, Richie, Ben, Eddie, Stanley, and Bev have all moved on from their lives in Derry, Maine, leaving behind their memories with them. But when the group gets a call from their friend Mike, reminding them of a long-forgotten childhood oath, they are all forced to confront their past head-on. Will they be able to put an end once and for all to the evil that haunts Derry? Or will Pennywise be the one to have the last laugh?
Wow.
Nice.
Thank you. Bowing. Yeah, what made you pick this one? This is probably like the one I was most surprised when we got your list of three.
I think this is a good like merge of like everything that I love in movies. Like I talked about like how I love like emotional like stuff and like stuff that feels like very human. And then like with The Killing of a Sacred Deer, it's like very weird. And I feel like this movie is very much that. Like I love this movie because it's so like unafraid to like be weird and like go there. And it's like definitely one of the most like, I think, risky blockbusters in a long time. I'm surprised that Warner Bros. Was like, yeah, do that. Like for a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
I'm so here for like campy horror. So I feel like this very much plays into that. It very much feels like Sam Raimi-esque.
Definitely.
It also has like such a great emotional core. Like every single time I watch it, I cry. Like I bawl my eyes out every single time I watch it. I adore this movie. And when I first watched it, I didn't see any like the first reactions or anything because it really wasn't on Twitter all that much at the time. But I remember coming out of it and then finally like seeing like people's like Letterboxd scores and seeing people's reactions and watching reviews, and everyone was like, oh my God, this movie's terrible. And I'm like, we watched completely different movies because I came out expecting everyone to be like, yeah. Oh my God, it's the best thing, you know? So.
Yeah, it's fun. I just love all the casting this. Like, I stand behind this being some of the best like adult to child casting in a series that I think I have seen, because every single character feels like a pretty spot on casting and just like did such a good job at reflecting like how the children acted in the first one as well, which I think is really cool, obviously.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think the casting in this movie is so good.
It's kind of like insane. Like I think specifically the guy who is older Eddie, like just looks wise, I'm like, it's insane like how spot on they got.
Yeah, and like they're all like really good actors too, because you would think if they're just trying to cast for looks or whatever, it's like amazing that they were able to cast as many like really good actors and actresses as they could that still looked like the kids and still were able to like build the characters as adults, which is really cool.
And not super high profile names, which I always love to see.
Exactly. Exactly. Like that's how I can tell that they really cared about the casting, because like there are some higher profile, but I feel like a lot of just B tier names, like B list actors.
Like I wouldn't say Bill Hader is like a high profile name or.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
I think Jessica Chastain and James McAvoy are, but.
Yeah. Like I love that Bill Hader. I love Bill Hader. But I like that he's someone that a lot of people wouldn't like look at and be like, oh, he would be perfect for this role. You know, like he's someone that like, I'm really impressed that they like went with him, because I feel like he's the kind of person that normally a studio wouldn't cast him as something like this even, or like him be a go-to, but like he fits the role so well. And I think that's one thing that this movie does so well, is take some risks in that regard of like trying to do what's best for the movie itself rather than like what is best to like bring in a ton of people or have it be a major blockbuster. That it's more about like what stays true to the actual film and the story itself.
Yeah, you know, there were some producers in that room being like, we got to get Chris Pratt for this role, guys, come on, he'll bring in all the people.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. I remember he was such like a huge fan casting for Ben.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
That would have been a nightmare. Truly.
We dodged a bullet. Yeah.
We really did.
I was gonna say, I think Bill Hader is such like a cool name to like talk about, because he definitely, I feel like to general audiences and probably like studio execs too, like when you hear his name you think of like supporting comedy
SNL,
you know, guy, obviously from like SNL and stuff like that. And he's only really starred in like, not even starred, like he's rarely the star of like comedies that he's in. He's always like, you know, that funny guy in like those two scenes, you know. So Bill Hader, especially with like Barry, which would have just ended its first first or second season when this came out, he's completely like rebranded himself. Anyone who watches Barry knows that he's like insane in that show, and very much has like insane like dramatic chops, and the show is very funny at the same time, but it's also like very like heavily like, you know, rooted in dramatics, and he's incredible, and he's directed a lot of episodes for that show too, and the best episodes of the show, I think. And he's incredible here. I think he steals the show.
Yeah, he's great movie, dramatic performance, which you just wouldn't expect from him. I mean, if you see Barry, I think you would. But like looking at his filmography, it's Angry Birds, Pop Star, Finding Dory, BFG, Sausage Party, Power Rangers, Ralph Breaks the Internet, Toy Story 4. And then like so again, looking at his filmography, you just wouldn't think of him for this role. You know, I mean, a lot of those are animated roles too. And he kills it. Like, he really channeled both, like, he carries the comedy and also a lot of the emotion for me. Like, he does both in this movie, which...
He's kind of the heart of the movie.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, even from, like, the opening scene, I think the movie is, like, very much rooted in Richie's story. You know, with that opening of... it's very hard to watch, of the two men, you know, getting assaulted. And... I think a lot of people, like, when they came out of the movie, they always talk about, like, how, like, disjointed, like, the opening feels to the rest of the movie. And I'm like, I feel it's so well-rounded because you get that at the end of, you know, it's one of the last shots of the movie is Richie carving R&E into the bridge. So and you have, like, that I know. And you have, like, the beautiful and I can't believe that straight guy directed this because this his storyline is so like mature, you know. It doesn't feel like, you know, oh, we got to have like the big coming out scene of, like, him to, like, you know, the losers and stuff like that, and that, like, him dramatically telling Eddie that he's in love with him, you know, when he's dying and stuff like that. That never happens, you know, and that would like feel like out of place, obviously, and it's just it's so mature.
Yeah
I think he is just a great just great casting. Again, you're really good. And I want to bring it back a little bit too to what you said about this being really daring blockbuster, because I think that is really what makes it stand out to me, and also is the thing that I remembered about it most before rewatching it. There's a lot of shots that stick out to me, like I remembered vividly, which is like not something that really happens with blockbusters anymore with me, especially like if I've only seen them once. And it's just such a contrast from the first one, because I don't really like the first one very much, because I think it is very by the numbers, like, modern horror blockbuster fair, where there's just a lot of, like, I mean, this, you can see the Stranger Things influence, where, like, you got the nostalgia, and then it just didn't hit.
It had a production difference from this too, because Cary Fukunaga was originally attached to the first, and even we had a different casting for Pennywise. Will Poulter was initially cast.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a big, you know, difference in the way that this movie came about and that one did. And Cary Fukunaga wrote the first one, so Andy wasn't even, you know, in on the writing room for that one. And he is credited as the writer on this. So I think big difference. And there's reasons for those differences.
Yeah, you can really tell watching it, like, immediately. The visual style, the visual language.
Different cinematographers,
it's just completely different, so. Which is not great for the series. For me, it's great because I didn't really like the first one, but I think this one is actually a pretty, like, a good movie. And I think, like, even if all the choices maybe don't work for me, I'd rather a movie just make choices than, like, phone it in, I guess. So, like, I appreciate that this movie makes a lot of different creative decisions that you don't usually see in a movie with $79 million budget coming out as, like, the big horror movie of the fall for that year.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I have significant issues with it, but it's like it's one of those things where, same with like Far From Home, like I have issues with the movie, it's just like the things that I love about it just far outshadow those like issues. So when I'm watching it, it's not like I'm like, oh, this has pacing issues, because this movie's 3 hours long, and it definitely, like, you know, feels like a little bit of a slog towards like the middle half of the movie. But when I'm watching, I don't really care, because I'm like, I love these characters and I am so like invested in the story, and it just, it works for me like on all fronts most of the time, that it doesn't matter. makes me feel something, yeah. You know? That's like going back to what I said in the beginning, like it absolutely resonates with me emotionally. So it's hard for me to like walk out of this and be like, oh, I know like that, like, you know, got to me in so many ways, but it had that
yeah,
pacing
right,
issue.
Yeah. Which that really just dragged
so
down the movie.
So it's a bad movie.
You see all the pacing,
you know?
It's like, come on, I'm crying, but I'm like, why are you pacing? Yeah, exactly. That's such a good point where it's like, if it makes you,
yeah.
I think emotion overrides technicality every time. I mean, not for everyone, obviously, but for me personally. I'd much rather have a movie hit me emotionally than like impress me with its pacing or its visuals. Like, I mean, as much as I do enjoy those things.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, I think it's cool that you're able to do that, because I think for me, it's hard sometimes to separate like my criticisms from like the way that it makes me feel in my brain. And so I think it's always interesting when people can do that, and like, because that is something that is difficult for me. So I like hearing that you are able to say those kind of things that are like, yeah, this has flaws, but I still love it, and that's all that matters.
Well, and you,
right?
You are on film Twitter now, like, and unlike when this movie came out, and that's like a big red flag of film Twitter. Like, people hate that when you just say like, I like a movie because I like it. Like, you have to have a dissertation on.
I was fighting for my fucking life in 2019 on film Twitter, like this and it, like Far From Home and It Chapter Two. The girl who like gave both of those movies 5 stars and like they're some of my favorite movies of all time. Yeah, I was fighting for my life.
Yeah, it is not easy, but it's also not easy being a woman in that area. But I know for me too, like I definitely feel a pressure of like, oh, I don't know how much I want to post that I like, you know, thought this movie was good or thought like even like. With Shang-Chi, like, I didn't personally really like Shang-Chi. It just wasn't for me. But it's, like, almost hard to feel like I can say that on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's really refreshing to talk to people, because I know on our podcast and the whole point of this series is, like, to have movies like that, that it's, like, you're allowed to like what movies you want to like. Like, who cares if you like Far From Home and It Chapter 2. Like, why does it matter that I like
the world
this
is...
movie?
What in your life is changing so dramatically because I like those
the
movies?
The world is ending anyway, guys. Let's just watch It Chapter 2. Come on. Settle down. It's fine.
Let's admit it's a good movie.
Let me watch my Hallmark movies and enjoy them, please.
Man. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's maybe Short Term 12, I think, is maybe has broader appeal. But all three of these movies are very like specific styles, and not ones that are going to click with everyone. So
yeah,
I think that's cool.
I do just want to say I was very close to choosing Twilight as one of these movies.
Oh my God.
No. That would have worked too.
If there was a fourth choice, I definitely would have had Twilight here.
Iconic. That's amazing.
It's also one of my favorite movies of all time. I love Twilight to pieces. I actually have a Twilight tattoo. So.
Wow. I love that for you. That is awesome.
So just wrapping up this triple feature then, I think that's pretty much a good wrap up for it. One thing I would say too, you know, like I always, when I'm watching these, try to look for like the connections, even if there's like not a connection, I'll make a connection. Like, but you know, I think like all of these, they deal in some way with the characters confronting their past, or like confronting a past mistake that they have made, or not mistake, or in some cases mistake, but just confronting the past and dealing with the either repercussions or just what. Dealing with their past trauma or just, you know, past, you know? And so that think that might be a little bit of a connector there where you have short-term 12 with the main characters dealing with trauma from their past and trying to make peace with that. You have in Killing of the Sacred Deer, this guy's life coming apart because of some mistake he made in his job. And then It Chapter 2, I think, is the biggest one where, like, all of these people are being haunted by their past for one reason or another, and they all have to go back and figure out how to move on with their lives. So there's a little bit of a connector there. So, you know, like I said.
Which all boils down to feeling things from movies. You want to watch movies with characters that make you feel something.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Yeah, they're all very rooted in character. I mean, like, even Killing of Sacred Deer, which I think people wouldn't expect that, but, like, that movie, I think, is rooted in the character of Colin Farrell's character and his, like, it's all driven by his motive, like, not motives, but, like, his actions. Like, he controls that movie. Even if he feels out of control, like, he's being put in control. He just doesn't want to do what he has to do, so.
Literally, the character is, like, it's
which
your
that's actually so interesting. Like, because you feel like you're out of control, but in reality, like, he has all the control in the movie. It's his choice of what, like, you can pick, you know? Like, I'm giving you the choice. Yeah. Great. Wow, that's a great movie. We're not talking about that one anymore, but yeah. All right. So that was good. That was a good triple feature. I think that I love doing these one episodes, and I would love to do more in the future, like in the next year. I really want to try to get some more people on for these because, like we said, I think getting other opinions, other perspectives, platforming those perspectives and opinions is helpful for the audience and also just for us, like, because I like to get outside my own bubble, obviously, once in a while, or just even the bubble of, like, the stuff that we feel like we should cover on the pod, and just give the reins to someone else and let them decide, like, what movies that we're going to talk about. So very, very cool. Before we jump into this question of the week, I want to make an amendment to our last one of our answers here, because Bella, so she started her original comment with, from what I've seen, way less. So she hadn't seen the movie at that point. So, but I appreciate her commenting because we like all the comments we can get. But now she actually has just seen the movie and she says, I take it back. I take it all back. I really love this movie. Thena is my mom and I would die for her. So that is her, the amendment to the, comment. So we got another one on the Eternals train.
Yay!
That was the character arc of this Daniel Day-Cretton movie. That was our arc. The overall arching.
Hannah, do you want to share any wrapping up thoughts about your movies as a whole, about you, about your love for Barry,
we're giving you the floor.
Want to share?
I love how my love for Barry can be taken two ways, like, because Barry is my favorite show, and then also Barry Keoghan is love of my life. Also, we're besties because of that tweet. So
yeah, of course.
I don't know if I have any more thoughts on the movies, but if you like listening to me, I have two podcasts that I mentioned in the beginning, Cinemania World and then Art Podcastin. You can find those on whatever streaming platforms that you wish. And then I also have a Twitter, Rejected Hannah. Tweet some tweets over there for sure.
It's always a fun time. All right, so the question of the week is, what is your favorite Barry Keoghan performance? So, Hannah, if you want to answer this now, if you know off the top of your head.
I do.
All right.
American Animals. A movie that a lot of people haven't seen, but it's fucking fantastic. And he's incredible in it. It's definitely different for him because I feel like he's kind of typecast as like a villain. And he's definitely not that in this movie. His performance is very like quiet and like, just like introspective. It's so good. Him and Evan Peters are fantastic in it. So watch American Animals. If I know that he's like, he's found some new fame, so like people who have just watched Eternals and connected to Barry, definitely watch American Animals.
Yeah, that one's been in my watch list, but I just haven't seen it, so I'll have to check it out.
A good deep cut there, you know, for the fans. Perfect. So that question of the week can be answered basically anywhere we are. So we have Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Just search Secondhand Film Critics and we should pop up. So you can answer the question there, tweet at us. We also have a website, which you could answer it there, or an email, secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com. So you have no excuse not to answer our question of the week. So many ways.
Yeah. Unless maybe you've never seen a Barry Keoghan movie. Then in that case,
you gotta at least
see
Dunkirk. I feel like Dunkirk is big enough. Most people could have seen that.
Yeah. Or now Eternals.
Like, in conclusion, I need Eternals to come out on Disney Plus now so I can get HD edits.
Good call.
Of course.
Our next episode, Kayla, what is it? It's a bit of a transition episode into our holiday episodes.
Into our holiday, yeah. So we're meeting the holidays in the middle. So we will be doing another episode in our childhood classics series where we talk about movies that we watched and enjoyed as kids and sort of revisit them if they're ones we haven't seen in a while. But I think these are ones that we've seen very often as adults, and that is the Charlie Brown movies or shorts or however you want to call them.
The main three.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about Charlie Brown and the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving, and Charlie Brown Christmas. So we'll hit all three holidays that are happening basically in these October through December, and it'll kick off, pretty much kick off holiday season on the podcast.
I think it's a great idea. I think a stroke of genius by us with this one.
Yeah, we're so smart.
Potentially the greatest trilogy of all time. So we'll talk about that next week.
Thanks for listening, and until next time, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Noah.
And I'm Hannah.
And we're your second-hand
film critics. Perfect.